Hello again, weary traveler. Welcome back to the Mayan Sculptors podcast. I've decided this is how I'm opening the show from now on. Sit down with your favorite energy drink of choice and listen as two random queers talk to you about a competitive Elder Dragon Highlander.
This totally serious, not jokey, competitive EDH podcast is brought to you by the wonderful patrons of the podcast.
What is that? Like
Welcome to the podcast.
Yeah.
Hey. I'm Cal.
I'm Ian. Hello. Welcome.
And we're doing the we're here to do the whole, you know, we're here to tell you what the best decks in the format are.
Yeah.
Like, certifiably. Like, mm-hmm. These are the definitive mm-hmm. list
yeah.
of the best decks.
Yes.
We completely agree on everything. There's no differences yes. in the list.
According to 10 out of 10 math doctors, we have done the numbers and this is how you
But win. Only 9 out of 10 dentists.
Mm-hmm. That's true. That yeah. one dentist who just really, really loves Dargo Thrasios.
He's just really into it. How was Vegas? You just got back from Vegas. How did Vegas go?
I did get back from Vegas. Vegas was lovely. Insanely busy. We had first day we were there, we did a corner for people to learn CEDH, which was
yeah.
freaking awesome. We had Lua there, we had Smooth Brain EDH people there, we had Cam and Dylan, myself, we had Cyrus from Mental Misplay. Anyone else? We had a couple people from Playing With Power. Yeah, we had a bunch of people rotating in and out throughout the day. I was getting confirmation if I was missing anyone. But yeah, we had a lot of people there. It was awesome. A lot of people came, a lot of people learned. Towards the middle end of the day, it was definitely more people who were just like, I'd like this person and want to play with them. We were like, oh, yeah. Are you trying to learn? And they were like, well, no, but I want to play.
We were like, okay. Amazing.
Yeah, but it was a good time. And then, you know, Vegas magic stuff, right? We didn't do a lot of the gambling and whatnot.
The Vegas-y probably. Things.
Yeah.
Did you see the sphere?
We specifically had a hotel that was right across the street from the sphere.
Oh my goodness.
I was unaware of the sphere or the meme about the sphere. And then I was there and people were like, oh my God, it's the sphere. And I was like, what the fuck is happening? but yes, the sphere was lovely. It tripped me out multiple times. And you know,
we're all it's bizarre looking, right?
It is a bizarre sphere, and it's just like a giant LED sphere that's just constantly like, hey, don't take acid and look at this, you know what I mean? Because it's just like the whole fucking time.
I saw one person post a video and it was just like a smiley face that was like actively looking around, and I was like, man, if I was high and I saw that, that would fuck yeah. me sideways. Like,
yeah,
I would be completely screwed.
Yeah. In case anyone's curious as to why I looked over in the corner concerningly, my cat just knocked a ping pong ball down the stairs and I had to hear it go the whole fucking time.
You have a great group of animals living in your house.
I have two rowdy cats and a lizard and one very sleepy dog.
Yes, I also have a sleepy dog. There's one Athena in our in yeah. who just she decided that the closet is her spot, and so she's sitting yeah, there.
Of course. Yeah, she does.
So before we get to our list,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Couple things. Mm. One,
yes.
Listen.
Yeah.
It's free.
Uh-huh.
It helps us out a lot.
Okay.
I really appreciate it. Definitely. If you would take your mouse or your Amazon Fire Stick remote. Or your phone and hit mm-hmm. the subscribe button.
Oh.
And if you would feel so inclined, and I know this is a little bit harder if you're on Fire TV, but you know, if you could just, after you do that, just move like one button over.
Okay.
Hit the like button.
Yeah. And if you're feeling fucking crazy, you go over to that little bell button, you hit that one too, and you're like, oh yeah, notifications.
You'll get the little pop, 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 pop.
Is that what sound your phone make?
No, I don't know why I made that sound, but
okay,
that was the one I went with. But yeah, hit that like subscribe button and leave a comment. I know it's harder if you're on, you know, Fire TV, you're sitting there in your living room, or if you're real cheap ass and you're using Roku, you know, I know it's a little harder, but it goes a long way. So greatly appreciate it. And, you know,
speaking of real cheap asses, if you're one of those and you're not supporting this podcast, the fuck? You should check out patreon.com/themindsculptors and, you know, maybe throw a toss a coin to your Witcher. Is that, I've never seen The Witcher.
Yeah. Toss a coin to your local CEDH content creator.
I do love that concept, by the way. I know nothing about The Witcher franchise, but I do love that they're like, hey, we have monster hunters in the area. Maybe tip them. Tip your bartenders. Maybe tip these guys too.
They're kind of making sure that the area is safe. Maybe throw them $1 if you can.
Yeah, no, for sure. Like, I would definitely feel inclined to tip those people. You know what I mean? Like, they're probably, whatever they're making, it's not enough. I would assume most monster hunters are not earning enough of a stipend.
Yes. Well, I mean, in Baldur's Gate, the monster hunter in there has to go meet the hag in order to get anything accomplished. She just doesn't have the ability. So, you know. Are you still being too cheap to play Baldur's Gate, or are you going to actually use your partner's copy?
So, here's the level of cheapness we are at, right? So it's not that I'm too cheap to play Baldur's Gate. It is the fact that I know I would want to play the PC version of the game, right? And just get it on my Steam account, right? We're going to go too deep on this, right?
I'm fucking ready.
I have been a fucking couch gamer my whole life. I do not like playing games on my PC. I sit here for work all the fucking time, and I don't want to sit here any longer in this basement to play games. I don't. I have zero desire to exist in this space any longer.
I understand.
So I am doing the opposite of cheap thing, and I'm going to start looking into a Steam Deck, because I need to treat it like a console.
I have my gaming computer is my laptop. And I upgraded to 32 gigabytes of RAM, and the graphics chip is all fine and all of that. But I got a lap desk from Costco, and it's like padded, like you write on, but on the bottom of it has this little like board that slides out, and it's a little mouse pad. And it's just like, so I sit on our couch and play Baldur's Gate while watching One Piece in the background or something like that. Like, it's truly revolutionary. And I had to do that because, like, so I tried playing it, like hooking my laptop up to the TV, playing it with a controller. And man, I've just played so many CRPGs in my day that I have to have a mouse. I'm just like, give me a mouse. I don't know how to.
That is very fair. You've been tainted by Dragon's Age.
No, Dragon's Age is actually worse with a mouse.
Really?
Yes. Like, Dragon's Age, I literally bought a controller specifically to play on my PC with.
No way.
Because it was just like the mouse controls were just, I mean, the game was built for consoles. The point and click part of it just doesn't really work.
Cringe.
And Baldur's Gate is kind of like the opposite, where it's like the controller functionality does work, but it was definitely built as a top-down CRPG,
understood.
But I fucking love games like this. So I have almost 300 hours logged in this game, and it's from just like while something's mixing down, or while I'm sitting with Cassidy or doing something, I'm just like sitting there, like also not fucking a demon.
I feel like it's also a game I would want to play with other people. Like, I don't think I would want to play it by myself.
So this is something I think that would be great for us here on the channel is you and I playing through Baldur's Gate.
I can fuck with that. I can absolutely fuck with that.
I think we could make a team of bards and just be.
Wasn't ready for that part.
Well, here's the thing. Okay. Mm-hmm. We're really going down a tangent, but I don't care anymore.
Yeah.
We're here and I can't get out of it. I don't know. So I've multiple times tried to not play a warlock in this game and in D&D. And I am so bad at playing any character that doesn't have any amount of charisma that I end up just respecing into a warlock.
Amazing. Truly.
I have to be able to make persuasion and deception checks. And if I can't do that, then I'm just like, well, this isn't fun anymore. Oh my goodness.
I have a granola bar. She has decided that is her entire being.
Dog would never do that.
No. So I am 100% the kind of D&D player who's like, if I can't make a bit out of my character, then I don't know what I'm doing. And that's where I'm at.
I really enjoy playing like really witty characters too, which is really fun. So I'm like a super sarcastic person in the game and all of that. And also, if you're a warlock, you can just, you just got Eldritch Blast, baby. You don't need nothing else. You just got Eldritch Blast. But I, if you really want a good time with Baldur's Gate, you respec Asterion to be a bard thief. And it's so much better because he ends up getting, it's because they kind of put him as like an arcane thief right away. And he's so much better if he's just a straight bard thief.
Okay.
Just anyway, I could talk about Baldur's Gate for an entire podcast. This is not sponsored by Larian.
My favorite Pokemon.
What'd you say?
Is it my favorite Pokemon?
Favorite Pokemon.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America N.A., member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
So we're here to update our power rankings for the month of September. Last month, I'm going to put those up right here. Here are our rankings from last month.
Wow, what a great idea, Cal.
Nobody gave me that idea. That was a pure 100% Cal original.
Boy, Willie,
Whoa, Nelly.
you sure you don't want to go with Boy Willie? I like Boy Willie.
No, I like Whoa Nelly a lot more. So let's get into this right here. First of all, before we get too deeply into it, do you have an honorable mention for this month?
Yeah, my honorable mention is Creek. Just because it did really well at Festival of Nights. So there were two in the top 16. There was one other top 16 from the deck in this month. That's really it. Like, it's not like popping off. It's not the new thing, but like, I think it just overperformed this month, if I'm being honest. But it is one of those decks that if you don't respect it, it can just start clowning on people, right? Like, there was a period where I think in the Playing with Power webcam league, like a player went like 18 or not 18. It was like 13-2 or something like that. Like some crazy record with Crick because people just were not respecting it. Like,
yeah, it's almost like that just could be said about most decks.
Yeah. But that one definitely like will punish you for letting it get away with anything, right? Like very,
it's super explosive, right?
Yeah, like, yeah.
The thing that I think is really funny about Kirk, and I think this is why I'm not a huge fan of it, is it overperformed and its win percentage was 28%, which is like slightly below average.
Yeah.
And like, you know, it's a good month. I guess 25% is average, technically.
Where are you how do you calculate win percentage? Where are you doing that?
So,
or are you just doing that manually?
I did that manually. I went through and manually did all of these win percentages because they don't give us win percentages. They give us conversion percentages. Not to make a point here, but conversion percentage is a little bit misleading because it doesn't show you how the decks overall are performing. It just shows you, well, these made top 16.
Yeah. I also want to like take a second because we got a bit of a problem with some of these tournaments, I think, which is the draw system is broken.
Yes.
And right now what's happening is, and I know Eminence is like behind the scenes trying to figure out a way to avoid this situation, right? Because we have a lot of major tournaments coming up and this kind of sucks. But like basically, especially in these 5-round tournaments, you can go like 2-0, right? And then you can literally propose intentional draws for the next 3 rounds. And unless you have like a 300 person tournament, you're not going to get punished for that.
Yep.
Right. And that sucks. Like no one should be statistically encouraged to not play 6 hours of Magic, or I guess not 6 hours, but like almost 4.5 hours of Magic, right? Like that is an awful precedent that we have going on right now with these tournament structures. And it's like, I mean, it super sucks because it's right as far as like with the current system, right? Like it is like it is correct to go about this process. And it's like, why is that the case? Right. So once again, we talked about what happened at SEG Columbus, right? Where they threw a wrench in the thing by only matching people up by win percentages, and that, or not by win percentages, but by like by number of wins,
just
right?
Wins.
And that was awesome. And I think like we need to do something like that. And I did talk with Eminence and I was like, hey, I think Star City Games accidentally did something right. And they were like, what? So I hope that we use a system like that. I know they're also in conversations about like draws being worth 0 points, which I think has.
I think that's a bad idea.
I have some problems with it for sure.
I think that is 100. I've said this on Twitter. We don't need to reinvent the wheel. Just like they, listen, it for all of history, here's how you calculate win percentage. It's not hard. A win is worth 1 point, a loss is worth 0, and a draw is worth half a win. That's it. That's literally what
better than they are now currently, right?
Well, I mean, you can make the point system behind it really doesn't matter as long as the win percentage, like the win percentage is really all that should matter. And then next to that, you need to have tiebreakers at like need to decide how you're going to break ties. But win percentage is really all that should matter.
Well, that's why the 5-1 like, system exists, right? Because people used to draw twice and then it would be worth a win, right? That's awful. Right.
Yeah. I mean, that's generally like the way it work, and I think we feel it more in EDH because it's four players, right?
Right.
Like if it's 1v1, it's not a big deal,
right? Your expected win percentage is so much lower, right?
Like right.
So,
yeah. With that being said, my honorable mention for the month of September is Talion. Had 2 top 16s this month. Overall win percentage was 35%, which is about 10% above average. It's really good, really good win percentage for a deck right out the gates. And I think it's a deck to keep your eyes on. I think that it is it continuing my, what is this now? Is this the third month in a row? It's the third month in a row I have put a blue black control deck as my honorable mention. But this is the one that I feel like the most like, oh I think God, this right. is,
I didn't even think about that.
Yeah. It is, it's on course, I think, to be in my top 10. But
I think it's
just, yeah, it's this brand new. Stupid.
The card's so stupid. It's insane. It's going in all, like, I'm playing it in Rog's Eye, Cal. Like, I'm it's a dumb magic card. I literally did a coaching session or a coaching gameplay session where it was like the whole game was warped around. Someone had Talion in the command zone, another person had it in the 99, and a third person copied it. And it was like, that was the whole fucking game.
Like, Talion to me feels like it is what we thought the Orcish Bowmasters was going to be. Like, a lot, or is at minimum a lot closer. Remember how we thought that, like, Orcish Bowmasters were going to completely warp games around it, which it does to some extent. Yeah. But I actually think Talion does that in a much more impactful way because it directly impacts life total and card advantage at the same time.
Mm. Yeah, for me, Talion really just is like, it's another Rhystic Study, and the life chip away is like nice. Right, I don't think it's
You know, we should ban Rhystic Study.
I mean, I actually don't disagree with that take. I think Rhystic Study is inherently bad for the game. Like, in general, I think Rhystic and Mystic are not great. They're a Punisher mechanic that can be directly affected by your opponents. Yeah, I don't know. But also, like, Bowmasters would also take care of this whole problem anyways. So any of those cards, I'm not like pro banned. I just think, like, in an objective vacuum, there are certain cards that would just make the meta healthier if they were gone, right? Like, I'm not a ban Thoracle person. I'm not a ban, you know, Underworld Breach person. I'm not a ban Ad Nauz person. I think I like the Rock, Paper, Scissors of those cards, right?
Mm-hmm.
But I think, like, cards that fundamentally punish an archetype for no reason while other archetypes get away with it, like Bowmasters, are, like, shitty. And they're not great for the format. I don't think Talion's that bad, though. Like, I think Talion is, like, it's decently easy enough to play around. Like, I don't think the two life adds up for sure, but it adds up, right? It's not like it's immediately like I cannot cast two drop spells, right?
Well, I think the reason I kind of say, like, put it in that, like, category is because you can play it, like, specifically when it is your commander.
Mm-hmm.
I think that it punishes that in a way that other things can't. And I think when you play it as your commander, it just, like, immediately, like, it's card draw and card draw punishment at the same time, which is, or not draw punishment, but, like, card punishment in a way, at the same time. So it's kind of one part Timna, but it's like one part Rhystic Study to one part Shieldred, right? Mm-hmm. So I like that about Talion, but.
That card says player lose life, right? It doesn't say, like, deals damage to them.
Correct.
Okay. Correct. I was going to say, you can't just slap a curiosity on Talion, right? Like,
no.
That would be insane.
That would be absolutely bonkers.
But I was talking about this with someone the other day. It was like, I don't think, like the format's in a weird place where it's, you just encouraged to play blue-black X right now. And it's not because of Thoracle. It's because of the fact that you get Rhystic, Mystic, and Talion. Like, and the One Ring. Like, just crazy.
Yeah.
And then you get Esper and get, you know, Esper Sentinel and Grand Abolisher. And, like, it's.
Yeah, it's interesting. I think blue black is just you get a lot of card draw. You get a lot of card. Mm-hmm. You get a lot of answers, and you got a lot of, like, acceleration that you don't get in other colors. And I think, like, the decision tree being like, do I want to play, like, what the third color is, if you're going to play one, I think is really interesting because they all kind of bring different things to the table.
Yep.
And so it all kind of depends on what type of game you're looking to play. And so, like, I think that's all really fascinating, and I could probably talk about that in and of itself for an hour and a half. But
side note, this is a question for you.
Yeah.
Do you think now that we have Talion and the One Ring, do you think Nauzlist Blue Farm is a thing?
100%. 100%. I thought it was a thing before that, TBH. Yeah. Like,
I think I might try that this weekend.
I think Nauzlist Blue Farm is, I already thought it was viable pre all of this, but now it's just like, I don't see why I need Nauz in my control deck. Yeah. Like, this was one of the things we talked about with Arden Silas, right? Was Arden Silas had the we were looking at the list and we looked at the average CMC and it was like 1.2. It was like up there with fucking Rog'Sai in terms of like how low to the ground it was. We were like, oh, we could probably slap a Nos in this and see how it goes. And so we play tested that. We were just like, fuck, this Nos is like absolute ass. And it's, I don't think Tim Necrom or, you know, Tivit or any of these decks are particularly well positioned to really well take advantage of Nos.
Yeah.
And I just, the games you win with Tim Necrom are the games where you sit there and you just go, okay, I'm going to play this. I'm going to draw some cards. I'm going to interact a little bit. And then, oop, here's my window gone. And I fully think that's possible.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. As I said, I'm going to give it a shot this weekend. We'll see what happens. But I think the more I've been playing the deck, the more I've been like, I don't play for the Adnaz. If anything, it feels like a bait sometimes. And I'm playing worse cards because I'm playing Nas. So like,
yeah, why am I playing this? you have to play like a bunch of rituals and like a bunch of rocks that you don't really want to be on.
Yep.
And it's just like, why am I playing this for this card that I don't even know that I want to be playing anyway?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I love that you and I are on the same page about this. It's you and I are a lot more similar players than I think a lot of people are like aware of. We just like skew to different sides of the same play style.
I tend to be more creature heavy as a player, right? Whereas you're definitely a lot more on the non-creature side of things. Yeah.
Yeah. But we both ultimately like playing control. Like we have a thing. So with that being said, let's get into this top 10. Number 10 for you, Ian, is you had Thras Bruce there last month. What do you got there at 10?
I got the king himself, Kenrith.
Kenrith the Return King.
Kenrith the Return King. You know, I it's always a deck I just kind of am like, all right, sure, it's here, right? Whatever. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't know. But it is a deck that, I don't know, it just does the thing consistently enough. I think a lot of people who are smart about it are playing the deck in a way that it is just like Kenrith is a 5-color infinite mana outlet.
Right.
That's all it needs to be. I think for a long time people have tried to make Kenrith a lot more than it is. And if the game stalls out and you get Kenrith out, hell yeah. Like, good job. You have the best toolbox in the command zone, right?
Right.
But that is not what Kenrith excels at. That is not what Kenrith is good at. So just play it as a 5-color value pile. It's super boring. It's super like whatever. Now, that being said, there's the other complete version of this deck, which is what PTD has been playing with this. Mm-hmm. And this is like the King's Kitten version of this deck, which is also a completely different thing. Mm-hmm. And so this deck is like Displace Your Kitten combos. It has Lurrus in there. It uses Deadeye Navigator combos, right? Like
it's almost like an evolution deck in a way.
It reminds me a lot of like Hire's original Kenrith evolution lists. Like I'm talking about like mid COVID, like evolution project.
That's what I immediately thought of when I saw it. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It reminds me a lot of that. Like especially all Deadeye stuff. Like it definitely, Hire, if you're listening, this is they have taken some inspiration from your work for sure. Yeah. But yeah, it's definitely a very mid-rangey Kenrith list. It's not my favorite way to play the archetype, but I also like respect the game. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. It's interesting too, right? Like it's definitely a deck I feel like I would watch them play and be like, oh, that's interesting. I'd never thought about the interaction like this, this, and this, right? Like, right. I just feel like I'm missing something with this list because it looks a little all over the place, but I know it's not.
Kenrith is just one of those decks that I've played a lot of Kenrith in my time. Specifically, I've played a lot of Druid Kenrith with like Breach Lines and things like that. And it's just like, when you can break it down that no matter what way you build Kenrith, like all Kenrith decks end up boiling down to very similar pieces.
Yeah.
And I just kind of think it's boring. Mm-hmm. But I mean, it's putting up reasonable results. Like a 36% win percentage is not anything that's to snuff at. Like really good. It was the third best performing deck of the month of September. So
yeah,
very, very good results there. My number 10 is Dargo Thrasios. Completely absent from really a lot of
zero events. For nine.
Yeah.
Zero for nine.
Was not a good month for Dargo Thrasios, but
yeah.
Also the fact that it was zero for nine should also tell you a little bit about it, which is that not a lot of people were playing. I know like Freedom Waffle and people like that kind of moved over to some other lists for a little bit, or playing a little bit of other things.
I know Freedom played it in Moxmaster September and they missed it by the bubble.
Yeah.
Of the draws.
If I recall, Freedom played a few other things this past month too. So yeah. Like they were changing it up. But overall, like my point is the play rate is down right now from where it has been previously. Mm-hmm. I think Dargo Thras is still very strong. A lot of things that I've said in the past about it still apply. I think that people are Dargo's hard to play, right? Like I think a lot of people discount how truly difficult Dargo is to play. And just so
is that six of those were in Moxmaster September. Six of the nine Dargos, right?
So not a lot. It did not get played this month, right?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Like effectively just did not see play.
Yeah.
So it's one of those things where I still have it in my top 10. I still think it's a deck that you really got to respect. It's very good. Yeah. But as far as what September looks like, it did not do well this month and also just did not get played this month. Mm-hmm. So,
and I do think, Drawgate is a reason that, it's not up there, right? Like, Freedom finished 24th in the standings, right? But they were 2-2-1, which was literally like they needed one more draw and one less loss, and they would have been in the top 16 for this, this tournament, right? So it's like, I don't know. But the other pilots, like, with all the love and respect in the world, fucking did not do well with this deck, right?
Yeah.
Like, and so this might be a case of like maybe we just have a specialist. We have one person or two people who got one win with the deck, and then the others got zero wins.
It's just it's so hard to like gauge it off of one event, right?
Yeah,
because it's one of those things where it's just like, okay, so it only really got played at one event.
Yeah,
one person did really well, the rest of them didn't, and it's like, okay, well that doesn't mean anything really.
Yeah,
it's
hard
to make a lot of takes from that, but it's also hard to rank it at number five like I did last month because of that too. Like I can't keep it there, so I still think it's worthy of being up here in the top 10, but I don't know that it is my number five right now. I think if I were to look at it holistically from a like potential level, I think it's right up there, but I think right now it's just underperforming. Your number nine for the month of September, you had a Traxa Grand Unifier here last month. What do you got now?
Yeah, that card's moved up. But we have Niv, Niv-Mizzet Perun. This deck, this is mostly off of the back of Festival of Nights. Niv's done okay in other spots. I know Shauna missed out on top 16 at SCG Columbus, mostly because I think she went for some greedy plays instead of drawing into the top 16 like we were talking about. But then let's talk about Festival of Nights, where this deck had a top four in Chana's hands. We had a completely different player who got top 16 with it, and we had another player who lost the winning in to be top 16 with this deck. So three players show up to Festival of Nights. One makes top four, one makes top 16, one loses the win and end to make top 16. Maybe it was a good tournament for it. Maybe they read the metagame right, but like, that feels pretty indicative to me.
And, I mean, Shauna has a lot of consistent success with this deck, right?
Like, I think there's definitely something to be said about like someone who is definitely like clearly a master pilot of their list, right? Like, we're not going to not saying like the deck is secretly cracked and every single other person is just secretly sleeping on it because they're stupid, right? Like, that's not how that works per se, right? But there's something to be said about the fact that this deck is quite strong. I think it's also tough to play, right? Like, it's not, you know, I think there's going to be people who jam it into a Gilded Drake and they're like, oh no, what went wrong?
Like, yeah, you know what I mean? There's one of those things where like, I think, and this is one of the things that I really enjoy playing Shauna when I like every pod that I end up playing with Shauna. It's like one of my favorite games of Magic I end up playing. because she is a very talented control pilot and knows what she's doing. And that's kind of the biggest knock against Niv is you do have to be that in order to get the most out of this deck.
Yeah.
Because it is like in control decks like that in general are the less of the control decks that don't have escape valves like Thassa's Oracle or Breach to fall back on end up getting infinitely harder to play. So you have to be super tight. And I think that's maybe the biggest downfall of Niv is that Niv just doesn't have all the easy outs that other decks do.
I think that's super, super fair. I think the deck is, it's strong, right? Like it is hard to argue that the deck is not powerful, right? Yeah. Niv is just a powerful engine on its own. It's definitely it's got the stacks problem, right? Where it's like stacks is not objectively a bad archetype. It is just, it takes kind of a master to pilot it correctly, right? Mm-hmm. Like you have zero margin for error when you play stacks, or if you do have margin for error, it's very, very minimal, right? And I think the sort of like archetypal control decks of the format have the same issue, right? Where it's like, you know, you got to counter the right spell at the right time. You can't do the Baral thing where you're like, yes, look at all my counter spells I'm holding up. Like, no one's going to let you get away with that.
Right.
They're going to make you counter the first scary thing and then they're going to whoop your ass.
Yep.
Right. Like that is.
There's only so many free counter spells in the format.
That's exactly it. Oh, there's a cat hair in my tea.
Oh, no.
The worst possible timeline.
This is the dark timeline. Get your eye patch.
I don't know. And I know there's someone out there in the audience who's like, yeah, fuck this guy. If that's the worst timeline.
But yeah,
anyway, all that being said, control, very, very hard to play. Very, very good if you can make it work, right?
Yeah. And I think there's a reason, right? Like why like Timnachrom and Tivit and even Talion, right? Are the control decks that are really good and continue to see a lot of success. And it's because, hey, it turns out having blue and black with like the best win con in the game is like the best escape valve because you're like blue black control decks have it so easy because you're literally at any given moment like a tutor away from winning the game. And it's just like any other control deck just is automatically in my mind judged against that. Because you have to have that control, that release valve, and what your release valve looks like is insane. But like Niv keeps putting up results.
The deck is strong, right? It is definitely very, very solid, and it's the one card win conditions with your commander help a ton,
right?
My biggest complaint about this deck is the fact that I feel like I keep being like, I don't know how this deck does not just lose to losing its commander one time, but for some reason it doesn't, right? So for me, that's like my biggest thing is like I would want a backup outlet. I know the top 16 Niv list was also playing Glinthorn Buccaneer as basically like a backup Niv, which I appreciated. I think that's like a way I would like to build the deck, just to like have that other way of being like, okay, here's my way of like not just losing to Niv dying.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm probably more inclined to play it more like Shauna, but that should be the surprise of absolutely nobody.
0% surprise. 0%.
0 out of 0 people were surprised. My number 9 for the month of September, August, I had Dehada here. This month, this is where I have Kenrith. I think, like I said, when you were talking about it just a moment ago, Kenrith, 36% win percentage overall. Only 2 top 16s, which is kind of like lower than you feel like you want it to be. But I mean, overall, a 36% win percentage is nothing to scoff at. It is down from number 6 for me last month, but I still think it's really good. I love where it's positioned. You can only go so bad with 5 color commanders, right? So it's good. It's 5 colors. It's like Thrasios, but more expensive. And yeah, that's the take.
I think I do have a bit of a qualm when people compare Thrasios and Kenrith. Like, yes, they're both outlets in the command zone, but Thrasios is like, turns on your Fierce Guardianships, turns on your Mox Amber, turns on your Deflecting Swats, turns on your Deadly Relic, right? Like, that's like a, I feel a like huge that part of the Thrasios conversation gets ignored a lot, right? Like, maybe Thrasios isn't, like, paying four for Thrasios is not good anymore, right? Like, not in the meta where it is. But having a Fierce Guardianship on turn two is good. You know, so food for thought.
Absolutely. Number eight for you, you had Kenrith here last month. What do you got here?
Yeah, Malcolm Timna. This one, I feel like it moved around a little bit. I know it was on my list before, and it's been a little bit, you know, up and down all over the place, right? And last month it wasn't on mine, but the month before that, I know it was like number six, right? Oh my God.
Or it was number 10 the month before, excuse me.
Number 10. Okay, okay. So it's moved up a little bit. But the deck is just so consistent, right? Like, it is, it is less sexy Timna Krom, right?
Esper baby.
it does its thing, right? It does the thing decently. It's one of the best Jeweled Lotus decks in the format. It's, you know, our you know, player eliminated at the top 16 of Festival went like 3-0-4 in the Swiss with it, like just absolutely destroyed it, right?
Oh, do you want to know what its win percentage for September was?
Probably something fucking cracked, right?
It was like, 41%. 41% is so far above average. That's like truly astounding.
Yeah. And which is crazy because like it as a deck, it bugs me so much because like I keep going, but how does it actually keep fucking winning the game? And people are like, yeah, you just play Thoraful. And it's like, no, come on. Like, that can't be actually how people keep winning with this deck. I love a redundancy of win cons, but they keep doing it. You know what I mean? Like, it just, it keeps happening. And I don't know, like, the deck, I mean, obviously it has like Bowmasters to like control the mid game, but like, for example, the list that went deep on in Festival of Nights, like, I literally am looking through and it's like the other win con is Mnemonic Betrayal if they lose their Thoracle, and it's like they don't even have a Lab Man in the deck, right? Like, they don't even have Doomsday. Like,
well, that's just objectively correct.
Like, you think Doomsday out is like the move?
I think Doomsday has never been the move ever. And I think that people who were playing Doomsday were living in a 2006 Magic world. And
that's fair.
And
I was playing Timna Krom Doomsday for a while, like 2 years ago. And it was so much fun. It was not.
Doomsday's very fun. Like, don't get me wrong. Yeah. It's very fun. But I've never bought it. Like, you are always, the biggest downside with Doomsday, right? Mm-hmm. Is you are putting a card in the wrong spot in your pile away from losing at any given time, and it's just like not worth it, in my opinion.
Yeah. Oh, like, for sure. It is ballsy, ball in, for sure. Like, that is
So number eight for you, Malcolm Timna. Number eight for me is, second month in a row, Rog'Sai. Number eight. It is the most, like, you know what Rog'Sai is? I've called it a lot of things. Rog'Sai is what happens when you settle. Because you know how sometimes in life you meet people and they just settle on these, like, people that are fine, but they're not like spectacular. They're not amazing. They're just like, they're okay. They're solid sixes, right?
Yeah.
And Rog'Sai is that. Rog'Sai is super steady. It's reliable. It's got a good family. It's got a car. It's got a reasonable mid-level job. Like, that's what Rog'Sai is.
And yeah, wow.
It kind of, the metaphor feels like it's like trying to, like, it might sound like I'm coming like hot at Rog'Sai, but I'm not. Like, I'm actually complimenting it a lot. Because it's like the steadiest deck in the format. It just month after month after month, it's like, here's my 30% win rate, and here's my 30% win rate, and here's my 30% win rate. And it's just like slightly above average. Mm-hmm. It brings home the bacon, baby. If, listen, like I said, it's got that mid paying job.
Sure.
It's never going to be like the boss, but it's somebody else's boss. So okay. like mm-hmm. it's a supervisor at some place.
Yeah. Okay.
But that's what Rog'Sai is. I think it's good. It's fine. Mm-hmm. Like, same things I've been saying about it for months is if you want a deck to make top seat to get to top 16, Rog'Sai is a great deck for that. Mm-hmm. If you mm-hmm. want a deck to go deep into top 16, it's going to be hard.
Something else. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Like it's very, yeah. it's the average deck of the format. And I love Rog'Sai for that mm-hmm. reason. Like,
I don't think I can agree with you, but that's, we'll talk about it later.
Yeah. I mean, I keep looking at the stats and every month it is exactly the same, which is really good. But like,
yeah,
you know, same stats every single month.
I think it's also experiencing, weirdly enough, like, you know, how we always say like people play Blue Farm like Rog'Sai, right? Mm-hmm. I think people are playing Rog'Sai like they think they should play Rog'Sai is also a part of it. And we can talk about that a little later.
Yeah. I goldfished a bunch of hands with it. Mm-hmm. And I was just like, man, I have never goldfished a deck that is the least me deck I could humanly mm-hmm. imagine. Like, I truly adore it. What'd you say?
I said I truly adore it, to be honest.
I mean, I think it's great. I think it's amazing. Mm-hmm. If I could get myself into the headspace of playing this, mm-hmm. I'm sure I would love it. But it's just not the way I play. Like, I look at these opening hands, and I'm just like, bad card, bad card, bad card, bad card.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, like, all the cards suck, for sure.
Yeah. Like, I'm just like, why do I want this random 2-drop talisman? What does this do mm-hmm. for me? And it's mm-hmm. just like, I played too much Timna and Thrasios Timna and too much Tivit in my day. Mm-hmm. Can't get into the Gober headspace.
Right, right.
But yeah, that's what I have at number 8. Number 7, what do you got there, Ian?
Well, Callahan, at number 7, I've got our favorite game show-based commander, Najeela the Blade Blossom. Najeela's fallen from grace this month.
You had her at number 1 last month.
I did. She has been getting fucking dunked on. And this has been the story of Najeela since I have been playing this stupid format.
Yeah.
I thought maybe NBC Najeela might change the math on this equation, but no, we are literally in the exact same fucking circumstances that we were in like years ago, right? And mm-hmm. the situation is, and it happens every time, is Najeela does really well for a while, like mm-hmm. absolutely crushes people, and then people start going, oh, Najeela is the best deck.
Mm-hmm.
And then Najeela sucks because Najeela cannot be the target of all the removal. Mm-hmm. Like when you are in the games where you're casting Najeela for 7 and the rest of your hand is like, okay, well, it tutors for Derevi, and then I don't have any card advantage, and Najeela keeps dying, and nobody will let me have fun, and like, no, you're never going to do well with Najeela in those circumstances. Let's like, I want to take a look at these numbers. Like, I mean, even Memo, who's like, was absolutely just obliterating people throughout the year, has just been like falling flat with this deck, like 18th, 19th, 20th performances.
Talking with Memo, the impression I got from Memo is that Bowmasters has hurt the deck in a very real, considerable way. Like the way we thought Bowmasters was going to hit dork decks, it hit Najeela. And mm-hmm. like, it is like they are literally looking at tech against Bowmasters. That's how bad it is.
Yeah. I mean, like Spellskite Najeela probably is a good thing to be on right now, right? Like, honestly, on it
regardless.
Yeah. Well, that's fair. But like, yeah, I think, you know, I had one of my coaching patrons like do pretty well at Festival, and like they squeaked in. You know what I mean? Like they squeaked in.
I mean, like the win percentage for the month of September was 30%. Mm-hmm. Also important to note that it was like the fourth most played deck in the month of September. So I think there is some, I think there also is some of the Tivit, Timna, Chrom like mm-hmm. aspect to it where because of CEDH's popularity, a ton of eyes are on it right now.
Yeah.
And so a ton of people are playing it, and there are a lot of people who don't mm-hmm. understand how Najeela math works and don't know when to pivot onto which lines and stuff like that. But I also, Bowmasters has hit it pretty hard too.
Yeah. And I really find it interesting, like, I know you and I are using EDH Top 16 for a lot of these conversations, but like every little adjustment that we look at for the data, I think matters a lot, right? So, for example, I just edited the data that I'm looking at to like over 100, right? Like people at the tournaments, and like a lot of these numbers shift around a lot, right? If you look at, as opposed to like these 60 something person tournaments, right? Which, if you think about some of those top 16s, right? Like you can go 2 and 3, for example, at Bonfire, right? I missed out on Breakers making top 16 with a 2-3 record, right? Which is like, you know, not the worst record in the world, but it's not like an exceptional record, right? Like I was 17th place with the 2 and 3, right? So that's the more you look at the larger tournaments, I think the clearer some of these delineations become, right? Like you start to be like, okay, well, wait, what's actually getting in when it's 160 people, 120 people, right? That's the stuff that's interesting to me for sure.
My number seven was, I had Tyam here. Tyam is no longer here. Instead, it is back on the Billboard charts. It's a Traxa Grand Unifier.
We talk about Tyam's record, sorry, for this month. With tournaments of 100 plus people, 0 for 5. I think with tournaments of 60 plus people, it was 0 for 9. Like it
also didn't even make the 10 entries mark. So it also just didn't get played this month very much. So there's also that part to it. But yeah, Atraxa on the other hand had a exceptionally good month. Had a 42% win percentage.
Which
is bonker billies, and eight top 16s. Like it's
that is how I would describe bonker billies for sure.
But no, it's like Atraxa just, it's one of those things where we I don't know how many times in a row we can say this. I don't understand how the deck wins.
I'm kind of getting it now. I've seen it play enough.
I've seen it play enough, but when I try to play it, I'm just like, why is this? It's so awkward. And I understand it plays on like a very different axis than maybe some other, like, I know a lot of people call it like bad Tivit or whatever, but like it plays differently than Tivit. So I like it a lot. I think that I want to see another month, because remember, like in August, it just kind of like fell off the face of the earth. And then all of a sudden it was just like, here's the best month we've seen in like a while.
So you know how like back in the day, Timna Thrasios, the worst card in Timna Thrasios used to be Timna and Thrasios, right? In the sense of like they weren't the cards you're playing, right? Like in the same way that like there are some games with Tivit where you never cast Tivit. Right. I think Atraxa is very similar. Right? It is a deck that exists on the back of the fact that you just have four good colors, right? Like this deck is not an Atraxa deck as much as it is like this is a four color soup pile with a control finisher in the command zone. Right? Like the transition point from when you go, because like Tivit takes a while to accrue the advantage, right? But Atraxa is able to very quickly convert the late game into a win, because you're able to go like seven mana, draw four or more. Right. And then next turn, you're like, I'm going to play two mana to either flicker or a copy or et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Okay, now I'm drawing four or five more. It's like, okay, great. Also, here is seven lifelink in the air, which is really actually relevant. I literally played a game at this weekend at Vegas, right, where I lost my fastest Oracle very early in the game because I was borrowing an Atraxa deck, right? And I was like, oh, well, there's other win cons apart from this Thoracle. Put it under Chromox, right? As I'm tutoring, I go, I don't think I have another win con in this list. I look through, pass it to somebody else. They're like, yeah, you don't have another win con in this list. And I was like, cool, 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 cool. Apart from that, it was like manual kitten flickering bowmasters, right? Like it was not great. And definitely not how I would build the list for sure. but I was like, okay, I'm staying in the game. I don't even have no endurance, no Praetor's Grasp, no mnemonic betrayal, literally no other ways to win this game. Like there's, you can make infinite mana with food chain and then do nothing with it.
Okay.
Yeah. So I was like, okay, cool. And you know how I won that game? Commander damage.
Yeah, that checks out.
I just ground the game out to a halt. I put a Rhystic Study on the board. I put a Smothering Tithe on the board. I had a handful of counterspells, and I was like, 7-7-7. And that was the fucking game, right? Like, and I think that genuinely, you know, it's the reason we've been talking about Thrasios decks are dying in this format. Mm-hmm. Because, like, they can't, how can you outgrind that, right? Like, it's a clock and card advantage at the same time. Same thing with Tivit, right? Like, you, how is one Thrasios or two Thrasios activations a turn ever going to stand up to that plus a flying body in the air that's putting pressure on your life total?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think Thrasios is still well positioned, but I think, like, the way Thrasios Timna needs to play is different than how it used to play. And this is this is a thing that I'm going to talk about on a future podcast eventually, but I'm going to dig into more, is that I think we need to rethink green and how we play green.
Yeah.
I think that is really what Thrasios comes down to.
I actually really would be interested in that conversation for sure.
Yeah, I've been doing a lot of like stuff in Sultai, which originally started off as me like trying to brew with Sidisi.
Yeah, you're coping with Sidisi,
What it ended up being was just like, okay, how do I brew Sultai in general? And a lot of the conclusions I've been making is that I just don't play dorks. Like, that's basically the gist. In identifying what it is that green does really well and how to use that to your advantage, because I think what we need to understand is like you said earlier, the format right now is in a place where black blue X decks are incredibly well positioned.
Right.
So we know what black blue white does. We know what black blue red does. Now we have to figure out what does black blue green do. And I think that green, like, I don't think green is worse than it's ever been. I think it's just we have to rethink how we play green.
I will contest you that just because of the existence of Orcish Bowmasters, like, green is worse than it's ever been, right? Like, just
Can't just sit on dorks. You can't just do stuff like that. But I don't know maybe sitting on dorks was ever the right thing to begin with.
Well, think about the power of fucking Bloom Tender, right? Like, that card's insane, right? And that card is just invalidated by this format and the pace of the game so much nowadays because of Bowmasters, right? Like, Bloom Tender is fucking cracked. And it literally, I remember saying before Bowmasters was printed, that last Chaos tournament I played with Dawnmaker, I was like, Bloom Tender became a card that I didn't include in the list to the best card in the deck.
Right.
I literally said that out loud, the best card in the deck. And then immediately Bowmasters were printed and invalidated the best card in the deck. And it's like, well, shit, why am I playing this list right now? Right. Why am I playing it as is, you know?
Yeah. Bowmasters definitely shook a lot of things up, but this is why I say, I think we need to rethink green, and I think we need to reapproach how we look at green and what we use green for. And I've got some interesting ideas on that. But I actually think that Sylvan Library is now the best that it has ever been. And it's like this, its stocks just keep going up. But that's a whole other conversation. I think a podcast talking about like blue black X decks and what each of those colors bring to the table would be really interesting. Mm-hmm. So Najeela here. At number 7 for you, my number 7 was Atraxa. Number 6, you had Sisse Weatherlight Captain here last month. Ian, what do you have here now?
I have, coming in from the absolute sidelines, Kedis Malcolm. Let's go. Absolutely not on this list. And now just going to Dunk City. This deck coming out of nowhere. Big shout out to Samurai Dancer, who's a player who's been around for a bit, right? But they've been working on this Kedis Malcolm list and doing really well with it. I think, you know, I don't know, like, if it's just like coincidence or whatever, but like I did the top 16 where I played my version, which definitely was like pretty raw, right? I made that top 16 with it, and I was feeling really good about the deck. I was like, it is performing really well. It's just very consistent. You know, I called it Bad Kinnon, which is kind of like the energy it gives off for sure, right? But like Bad Kinnon with the win card, win come with the commander, nuance, whatever. It's a decent archetype, right? But I wasn't even playing the hack combos, right? The ones where you change the your text of your cards to pirates. There's a lot of the innovation in the archetype I wasn't even on. And, you know, then Samurai Dancer came in, absolutely doing very well with this archetype.
Right.
And it's just been performing pretty decently.
Yeah.
And what is
going on? What are you plugging, unplugging and plugging in?
My computer is, for some reason, having that, it like keeps doing that. I'm not like touching it.
Computer, stop.
Yeah. Yeah. Computer, fucking chill. All right, bud. Enough. But yes, it wasn't. Now you see, I've done it. Did it not have more than five entries? Is that why?
Yeah. I filtered it out because like my
three entries.
Yeah, yeah. My whole thing was it had to, like, decks that I included need to be played at least 10 times. Mm-hmm. And if it wasn't there, with the exception of Dargo, I did not include them.
Yeah. Dargo so was my exception. My performance in Malcolm Kettis, I think, was like right before our last top 10, right?
Yep.
But that's, you know, two people brought it to Moxmaster September, right?
Mm-hmm.
And both of them had top 16 records because of the draw issue we were talking about. One of them went 2-1-2, right? Which is, I think, if anything exacerbates how bad of a problem this is, the fact that a player went 2-1-2 and did not make top 16 because of how many people drew into the top 16, like, that's crazy. Like, 2-1-2 never misses the top 16. But anyways, that's a whole separate
conversation. I think what needs to happen, honestly, not to derail this, is TOs need to just say you cannot intentionally draw games until a certain point.
Yeah, like, that's I agree. I have been saying that as well. Like, like, you have to wait like 40 minutes into ID or whatever, right? Like, and then people won't want to at that point.
Yeah.
So two top 16 worthy records of the three decks that played it, and then one person played it festival and did quite badly, but that's okay.
Yeah.
I just think it's been doing very well. And like, if you expand the net out a little bit, like, you can see that it's been doing pretty decently in the past like month and a half.
Malcolm Kettis is one of those lists that kind of emphasizes this point of that I've been making for a while, which is there's so much unexplored space in the format that a deck like this can just pop off for a little bit and be really strong. And it's just, there's so much room. Like, there's so many commanders that just we haven't even touched, right?
Yep.
And so it's like, I don't know. Maybe there's something out there that is actually the best thing on the planet. We just haven't got it yet. And that's like,
I mean, think about like even like Lotho, right? Like, I know Zeb from Playing with Power has been playing that deck a decent amount, but like, I'm pretty sure he's the only one I've ever heard of talking about this card. And I'm like, it's still pretty freaking viable. Like, I think that's easily like a mid-range deck, and it's like no one's talking about it at all, like even slightly. So it's like, okay, if that's happening there, what else is happening? I know for a fact I have like Moxfield files. I'm like, this is definitely like a strong archetype that I'm not comfortable to bring to a format or a tournament right now. I was like, but it's still, I think, an extremely viable deck that literally I've never seen, you know, like partner combinations, archetypes, like all sorts of stuff.
Honestly, something that I've been, one of those cards for me has honestly been Hogak, where I've been playing around with Hogak a bunch, and I'm just like, oh, this card is still just cracked in half. Like,
I have thought about that card a lot. Yeah,
it's still really good. One of the things that I kind of realized with it, I was just like, oh, this is brain freeze for non-red decks.
In the command zone, I assume, right?
The way I was building it was I was playing it in the 99, so I was like, the replacement for what's it called for like breach brain freeze was Hogak Altar, and you don't need a lot to set that up either.
I think like Dargo takes up a lot of that space, if I'm being honest.
It does.
But it's definitely something worth exploring. But, for sure.
Like, that's kind of what I've been messing around with. That's kind of where my evolution has been, is I'm actually building like a Thrasios Timna, like not quite graveyard deck, but it is sort of
synergistic.
And it just kind of plays on like a different axis than it has in the past. But yeah, number six, Malcolm Kettis. My number six is also a Malcolm deck. This is where I have Malcolm Timna, also coming in off the sidelines. Like one percentage point off from how good Atraxa did this month.
Yep.
And the reason I have it higher is I think Malcolm Timna is proven itself as being a consistently good deck for a very long time. And I think now is the time to just say, okay, this is a top 10 deck and it has to earn its way out of the top 10 at this point.
Agreed.
Like it's just, it's a great deck. I think all Esper decks are incredibly well positioned right now. Blue, black, white. If you like playing control, baby, those are the best colors to be in. So,
agreed.
I like Malcolm Timna a lot.
Yep.
Number five for you. You had Rog'Sai here last month. What do you have here?
TNK, baby.
Yeah.
Timna and Chrom. It is great deck. Still doing its thing. Still very powerful. I think there's just not enough pilots playing it the best way.
I also have it here, number five as well.
Yeah. So I think it's you know, I think if Brian Koval was every Timna Chrom pilot, the deck would look a lot better. You know,
the wild thing is, though, the last couple of events that he's played it in, he's not done well with them. So it's just like
I thought he was playing Tivit in that last event he played it.
He in the last one he did, but the two events before that he played Timna in between that and the one that he won.
Yeah,
he like didn't even he like 0-3 dropped.
Well, yeah, it's interesting because Koval also like is. Like the tournaments he won, he always like would sneak in at like 14th and 15th and then win the whole thing. Right. So I think he like struggles in certain Swiss matchups, I feel like. And maybe now that he has a bit of reputation, he's getting a little more targeted, which is, the you know, welcome to the club.
Yeah. Welcome to Survivor, baby.
But no, I mean, it's interesting. Right. I think, I don't know. I think the deck is still very good. Right. Mm-hmm. I think, you know, the play second plan is still very good. I think I am definitely in the camp of like, I'm really excited to see what happens if I play a Nauseless version of this deck.
Yeah.
And that might be what my weekend is, but we'll see. I also, I'm also playing with some Displacer Kitten tech too.
You need to send me that list because I have thoughts.
Yeah,
I also have Timna Chrom here. Yeah. And it's just, you know, it's, kind of the same thing I feel about Rog'Sai, right? Is it's like it's literally 2 percentage points below Rog'Sai as far as like win percentage. Right there at 30% win percentage, it's above average. It's the it's that mid-level bureaucrat deck. Like that's it's good, love consistent. It's got a you know what? It makes 80k a year. It will pay the mortgage. You're gonna have a nice minivan. Like
I'm done with them.
If you want a good, steady husband, Timna Chrom is where you look.
Anyways, my number four is quite different from your number four.
Yeah,
I assume because you've already mentioned this card. My number four is Rog'Sai.
Yeah.
Beep beep. The vroom vroom beep beep machine is fucking cracked. I don't know, man. Like I see everything you say about this deck, right? I get it. I get where you're at. I also think like I thought the deck was good. I thought the deck had flaws. The tutor for Rhystic Study play patterns are fucking insane. Like the amount of times I've been like, oh no, old Rog'Sai would be so out of this game. And it's just like, but this is new Rog'Sai.
But now imagine the tutor for Rhystic Study game plan with a deck that's actually good.
I can't even get down this line with you. No, I
think love you, Rog'Sai.
It's fine. I just think like it has so much raw power, right? Like over the weekend. So it's my new favorite convention deck, by the way, because normally CEDH games at a convention take forever, right? But this was my last game of the night deck, and it was awesome because I won on turn one several times. I died on turn one several times. It was sweet.
Yeah.
But like, you know, there were literally several games where I was like, one of my favorite examples is like, I went, okay, turn one, Lotus Petal, Rogrek, Culling the Weak, Tainted Pact for my Brain Freeze, play Underworld Breach. And it was just like, okay, that's the game. It was over. You know what I mean? Like, it does have that raw potential. And I'm not saying the speed is every aspect of it, but there were also a game where I played a Ragavan early on, and I had a Mystic Remora, and I hit someone, took their Mystic Remora, and I had a Rhystic Study and two Mystic Remoras. You know what I mean? and I was able to outgrind that game because, you know, who wouldn't at that circumstance? Here,
here's the thing about that, though, that blows my mind is the fact that people cast spells into your two Mystic Remoras is the problem, right? Like the
they ran out of time, right? Like it was just a value of like, okay, they eventually have to do something, right? Because as soon as one person does literally anything, it ends up in the situation where, okay, well, there's a Tivit player here. The Tivit's on the table. They've got to cast this, or like the Tivit's the clock, right? So yeah. Everyone else was like, oh shit, we got to get out from under the clock, right? And like stuff like that was just happening, right? So it's not, you know, and also you can cast spells and make people respond to your spells, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, so. there's obviously more to that, but I think that, listen, if the reason the deck is really good is because Rhystic Study and Mystic Remora are really good, then there are so many other decks that are better than it.
Yeah, I think that's a little off the mark, but it's more the fact that it can capitalize upon those cards more than any other archetype, right? Yeah. It transitions from a deck that like folds to a counterspell to a deck that has multiple layers of redundancy.
And this is one of the good things about the deck, right? Is it is because we kind of talked about this earlier, right? Where it's like individually a lot of the cards are kind of like ass.
For sure.
But it's one of those one of those decks where it takes it, I will give you this. It does take advantage of Rhystic Study because it is one of those decks that if you give it like a ton of cards and it just has a bunch of cards in hand, all of those cards suddenly become really good because they are cards that need to be played together in order to work. And so it's one of those things where, you know, Rog'Sai, in my opinion, will only ever be as good as how bad your opponents are.
Sure.
That's,
you can also just bring the wrong deck into the table, right? Like it is one of those decks that does punish the meta very hard, right? Like if you're going to play, like, I think knowing what decks you play, right? Mm-hmm. You are setting yourself up to always be in a situation where you can outmaneuver that deck because of the type of archetypes you play, right? I think, you know, the average player playing something like for example, like I don't think you'd call certain Hermit Druid decks or like Protean Hulk decks or creature combo lists unplayable, right? But like against Rog'Sai, sometimes they feel that way because of how fast the deck is, right? And that's where the equation starts to change a little bit, right?
Yeah, it's just, it's so weird for me because it's like I play Arden against Rog'Sai lists and I'm just like, man, this deck just like mops the floor with fucking Rograk because it's just like, oh, you're playing this zero mana creature on turn one. Hey, thanks for the two cards, bud. It's just, I get what you're saying. I think it's really good. I think that I still stand by what I say is it just continues to be the mid tier deck. Like, because whenever I look at these rankings overall, it's like never going way over 30%. It's like, it just sits right at or around 30%, which is really good. I'm not saying that's bad, but right where it sits. Yeah. And, you know, that's why I say it's like the mid-tier.
Talked about the top 16 beforehand too, right? Where it's like, it will struggle in the top 16. Yeah, yeah, I agree. Right.
Yeah. My number four, this is where I have Najeela. I did have Najeela at number two. I'm not punishing it too hard yet because I still think that, Najeela is one of those decks that is always good. And yes, the meta is currently swinging back against it, but that just means you need to adapt how you play, has been my experience with Najeela. As somebody who's played a lot of Najeela, as somebody who's played against a lot of Najeela, the answer is usually you just change things up a little bit and you adjust your play style. And the deck will suddenly be good again. Because this is what's wild about Najeela is Najeela can make like four swaps and it's a control deck. So it's like, that's really the, like, right now I feel like control decks are like, we're kind of in control winter right now. I feel like where control is just exceptionally well positioned. Yep. And I feel like if you're playing Najeela right now, and you're struggling, I think if you move it closer to Tivit, you're going to have a better experience than if you move it closer to Rog'Sai.
I get behind that.
It's kind of my whole deal. Moving on up here at number three. What do you have number three?
Listen, I gotta show respect for the deck that's been clowning on the month. That's Atraxa. I mean, it's just had a crazy month. It genuinely has. It's been dominating. And I don't know if it's the metas that people are playing in or like whatever way it's shifting. I think a lot of the pieces that people are playing to hate out Tivit and hate out Kinnan early in the month don't hit Atraxa in the same way. They're similar archetypes, right? But they're not quite the same. And I think because of that, Atraxa sort of gets these free wins where, you know, the game goes just like a little too long and you're like, oh, here's Atraxa one, here's Atraxa two, and the game's over, right?
But it can also, like, in the at SCG Columbus, where it's just like, turn three Thassa's Oracle, Tain Impact, do I win? And you're just like, yep. Like,
right. Like, at the end of the day, it's still a good Esper deck, just has green, right? Like, so I don't know. It's a very strong archetype. I think the deck is, has a lot of potential. I think it's, you know, if you play Turbo Atraxa, you will lose the game. That is as clear cut as I can get with it. I think the balance of green in the deck is really interesting. Like, I'm trying out a version that like doesn't have any green tutors in it. But we also saw like the Hoarding Broodlord version of the deck that came out of one of the more recent tournaments, which is really interesting. Not my favorite, but I think really interesting. And I think there's a lot of innovations that'll be done with this archetype. I think it's the card just draws you so many freaking cards that like it's crazy. Like, also, I don't think anyone's been doing any exploring with like Razzicats.
Yeah, which is shocking, honestly.
Right, because like when you can, you're already playing all of these cards that like synergize with that strategy, right? But like then you can also just neoform your commander into a Razzicat.
You had said something about that in your tournament coverage when you were talking about the Broodlord deck, where you mentioned like, I don't know why Razzicat isn't just better than this, right? Like, I really agree with that. Where I think that like it's a
very you good play Razzicat so many deck. Less cards you don't want to play, right? In the archetype,
like Saw in Half. Right,
like Saw in Half or Sacrifice, right? Like those are not the cards you want to be playing in an Atraxa list, but they are for sure swappable with like Lion's Eye Diamond and Eternal Witness, which I would feel much more comfortable playing, right? Like you're already playing Displacer Kitten, right? So like literally just add two cards and you're in there, right?
Yeah, take out the two bad ones, put in the two good ones.
Like
done deal. My number three is Tivit. This is where I have Tivit. I have been backing, I backed up my words this month, and I stand by, I think Tivit, the only reason I moved it down is because Tivit, I think, is having the Timnachrom problem, where too many people are fucking playing it and have no idea what they're doing. And I
agree wholeheartedly. I've talked a lot about that.
Saw over and over and over people being like, oh, you turbo at Tivit. And I'm like, no, stop turboing Tivit. That's not what the deck wants to do. The way that I won those games, I mean, you saw the way, like, how did I win our match when we were playing in SCG Con? I played a Rhystic Study and a Shielder, right? Like, it was, I played two cards that just drowned everybody out in value. And it's just like, come on, guys. It performed slightly above average in the month of June, or excuse me, September, which is 26%, which when you compare it to the other win rates is underperforming. However, that is average. So it performed perfectly average. And if the worst month the deck is going to have is right on average, it's exactly where I want to be. So the deck is incredibly well positioned. You just need to just play smarter. Just don't stop turboing out your commander. That's not how the deck plays.
So I was very intelligent and definitely did not get confused when shuffling certain cards around, and definitely did not forget to put Tivit on my list. And that would be crazy if I had done that.
I was noticing something here that you put Kedah's Malcolm in over Tivit. And I have thoughts for you, friend.
No, I just literally it was in my number two slot, then it was in my number three slot, and then I replaced one of the decks in there and I just forgot to put it back in the deck. The list.
Do you want to take one out and put it in?
Yeah, I mean, I probably put it like, I probably just move everything down one, starting at Timnacrom. Like, I think Tivit's my number five.
Okay.
Yeah.
Moving everything down from Timnacrom down one.
Yeah. Yep. Okay. Tivit's great. Love Tivit. Had a bad month. It's getting hated out a little bit. Still one of the best decks in the format by far.
Yeah. Like, this is the thing, is the wild thing to me is the hate doesn't even really bother it that much. You just pivot a little bit. Like, it's truly astounding. I love the deck. It's so fucking good. I saw in your updated list, you moved on to Shieldred and Talion.
Yeah, I mean, I was going to do that for a while. Yeah, it is what it is.
I think the Shieldred stuff is, it's funny. We were having a conversation with one of your people in your Discord, and they were asking, you know, why don't you play Time Twister when you play all these like Shieldred and Narset? And my response is basically, well, you aren't trying to wheel people. You're a control deck. You play Windfall because Windfall punishes people in very specific windows. Mm-hmm. And you don't Windfall pretty much any other time. Like, it's...
For me, I would rather play Time Twister, but I don't have $6,000.
Well, my reason for playing Windfall is truly, I want it out of your deck. I want it in your graveyard. I play Grafdigger's Cage. I play Dothy. And I could probably play more aggressively and play like another hate piece in another grave.
I think I'm on Dothy, right?
I think it was on Dothy. But regardless,
if I'm on Dothy, then you know what? I'm sticking with my Windfall choice.
Yeah, like when you're on Dothy and Graf Cage, I'm just like, play Windfall. If they tutor, you go. I did this multiple times at SCGCon where somebody would tutor, and I was just like, cool, Windfall. And they're just like, oh, well, you just took the win out of my game or out of my hand. Mm-hmm. And I was like, yeah, I know. Yep. That's why I Windfalled. And now it's out of your deck. Beautiful.
Yeah. You know what? Honestly, I'm sticking with Windfall then. I didn't even think about that. It also punishes Rhystic Study greedy players a lot. Right? Yeah. Like it's,
I think people think Time Twister is better than it is. And it's one of those things where Time Twister is very good, but I don't think it's better objectively, right? Like it's good. Like all of these wheels need to be taken within
context. Each one has nuance. Yeah,
they're all like all of the wheels are super contextual. But Tivit is my number three deck. Is that what you want at your number three?
Or it'd be my number four.
Your number four. Okay. Okay. Yep. So number two, are our number two and number one the same? We talked about a pre-show.
Yes.
Okay.
If the two mana one is your number one, then yes.
That's the okay. So we're in unison. So number two, we have
we gotta say it in unison because we're in unison.
Okay. Right? One, two, three. Sissay with the red. if we want to have Arden here, let's fucking go. Arden
baby. I'm saying our number two, Dingus, not Arden. The fucking Arden's my number 7,000. Get out of here. Sissay, Weatherlight Captain is our number two.
We both have her here. What a fucking month for Sissay. What a turnaround. Mm-hmm. Sissay went from being horribly piloted, nobody knew what was going on, and underperforming to, hey, here's a 35% win percentage and a 37% conversion rate. Had the most top 16s of the month.
Yep.
Like, great month. I think the deck
is... I knew it was going to happen. Yeah.
People figured it out. Like...
Yeah. Well, not only that, but like, you know, with all the love in the world, the people who did well with Sissay this month were also the people who were doing well with Sissay beforehand. You know what I mean? It's like Baneslayer, me, Malcolm, like a couple other people, right? Like they've all been top performances with the deck that is like actually doing pretty well. And it's been people who, you know, I think what happened was it got attention flooded, right? Mm-hmm. Either A, it was getting hated out of games kind of unnecessarily, or B, it was being played by people who didn't know the lines correctly, right? Like I literally have had coaching sessions with people where I was like, oh yeah, this is the win con line. And I was like, you can do this, this, and this. And they were like, I didn't even see half of those. And I was like, you know, any wins you give up if you don't see all the lines in the deck.
Yeah.
Right. Like the deck is crazy when the lines are there. Right. But like, if you miss those lines, the deck's a lot worse. So you got to actually be like on that shit. Like you cannot like bring Sisse and miss those opportunities because it's a deck that can steal wins out of nowhere. And so like you need to be able to steal them. If you're trying to play the fair game and like go through combos in a very obvious way, the deck's not going to do well for you.
Yeah. Yeah. I fully agree. I would like to just take a moment. I've been playing Sisse since the card came out, right? Like I was one of the first people who was like, oh, this card's really stupid. So I will always feel a little good about the fact that I felt like I was a little ahead of the curve on that one. But no, I think that I agree with everything you just said. It's like Sisse is really good and it like just doesn't care about Bowmasters in a way that's very interesting for a creature deck. But I love it. It's everything I love about combo decks. It's a toolboxy deck. It does all those things. I love it.
I mean, I'm a big sucker for Planeswalkers, and the fact that it makes them playable in CEDH is just like,
so good.
My love.
I love it. Now, how do I jam Teferi, Hero of Dominaria into that deck?
Probably by playing the Jeggy Companion version. Oh, no, Hero of Dominaria.
Yeah, the five mana one, the big one.
Who are you?
The Ravnica Elite, like the Ravnica, like standard block.
I actually do think like that card's probably the most playable in Grand Arbiter, if I'm being honest, because that card at three mana is actually pretty good.
Yeah. But number two, we both have Sisse. Number one, we have Kinnan, Bonder Prodigy.
Hell yeah.
Kinnan's up here. Hey, remember when I was like, Kinnan is not great, and I had it like, where did I have it? Number nine.
Yeah. What sort of seasoning have you added to your words? I'm curious how your words taste now that you're eating your words.
Oh, it's delightful. I just put a lot of salt on it.
There it is. Yeah, covered in salt.
Yeah. It's delightful. I love it. I love salty
food. If you filter by entries and tournament size of greater than 100 participants, what's that number one deck there? Huh, weird. It kind of looks like Kinnan, Bonder Prodigy. Weird, strange. No, this deck has just been doing really well. I think, you know, obviously Wounded Satellite showing up and performing very well with it is
a huge part of that. Yeah.
Pretty consistent, right? But you have myself at Festival of Nights, you have Mike Sad, you have Jorman playing it. You have the fact that it got 6th, 7th, and 8th place in Moxmaster September. And even the people who are doing bad with the deck are barely missing out on top 16.
Yeah.
In these larger events. Now, I want to be clear. Some of the smaller events, and this is literally definitive Kinnan problem that has been existing since the deck has been out, is that people don't do well with it at smaller events, usually in the situation, because they are still learning the deck and learning the play patterns of the deck. The deck is a deck that has a pretty, not low floor, but it has a floor that is very easy to be standing at the bottom of when you don't get the deck and the play patterns of, right? Like it is very easy to be playing the deck badly. And so I guess that does mean it has a low floor, right?
I don't know. I've seen so many people just like bullshit their way into like, oh, don't worry about me. I'm just playing Kinnan. I'm just making mana. And people just completely ignore the deck. And then all of a sudden they activate it twice.
That's how you play it like, well. That's what I'm saying. That's not how you play it badly. That's how you play Kinnan, right? Yeah. Like, it's just like, you're like, oh, I'm literally doing nothing. And it's true. Because a lot of the times you will be literally doing nothing. You're like, oh, line flipped in a hole breaker. Right? Like, and that sometimes that's just how it works, right? And then other times, like, you grind out the game. You play a mid-range game plan. You do things the right way. You know, sometimes you
play good old Christian magic.
yeah. Sometimes you perplex and chimera people. That's not my particular spice, but I get it. Hey, look, you know, do your thing. I think it is a deck that has just so much potential. I think it's the deck that I feel most confident going into tournaments with, just because of the fact that it plays a long game really well, right? Like if you have to, you know, rule of law the situation, or, you know, a situation where you're like, I can't cast spells because this person has a Rissic Study or a rule of law, or whatever, right? You are fine in that circumstance because you can sit back on kinetic activations, unless you can't sit back on kinetic activations.
In which case, it sucks, right?
Yeah, but and then there's other scenarios where you're like, okay, wait, no, I have the equivalent of a Rograk in the command zone. Like I can double up my mana and just go crazy, right? Like, but it can do both things, which is what makes the deck so good.
Yeah, I fully agree. I have come around on this deck. I don't know how long it's going to sit here because it is going to be a deck that I think I don't know that it will go full Winota because I don't know that it can possibly go full Winota, but I do think it has that potential to get Eye of Sauron to death, if that makes sense.
Well, that's how it happened at Festival, right? Like I was the only player who made top 16 of like, I think 10 people showed up with Kinnan at Festival and I was the only one who made top 16. But the other tournaments, the weeks afterwards, it came back and clowned on people because they were like, oh, Kinnan got hated out. Great. Hey, we're back. You guys going to keep doing that? And they were like, I don't know if we should keep it. And they're like, oh, we lost Kinnan. Like, yeah. Right.
This has been my tried and true piece of advice since the day Kinnan has come out. And that is when you see Kinnan, you kill Kinnan. And that is how
we've gone over so many times on this podcast why that does not work because Kinnan is a two mana commander. Yeah. Right. Like it just doesn't.
But the thing is, like it's never led me astray. So, so yeah, just recapping your number 10. At number 10, you had Niv-Mizzet Perun. Number 9, Malcolm Timna. Number 8, Najeela. Number 7, Kedis Malcolm. 6, Timna Krom. 5, Rog-Sai. 4, Tivit. Oh, 5 is Tivit? Okay. 5 is Tivit. Right. 4 is Rog-Sai. 3 is Atraxa Grand Unifier. 2 is Sisse Weatherlight Captain, and 1 is Kinnan Bonder Prodigy. My 10 is number 10, Dargo Thras, number 9, Kenrith, 8, Rog-Sai, 7 is Atraxa, 6 is Malcolm Timna, 5 is Timna Krom, 4 is Najeela, 3 is Tivit, 2 is Sisse, 1 is Kinnan. And it was a huge shakeup of the meta. I feel like this month, like the meta feels like it completely flipped on its head.
Yeah, it's been moving. It's been moving quite a lot. It's one of those things where it's just things are happening. The stuff is developing. The games are developing. Right. Mm-hmm. And it's things are changing around for sure.
Yeah. It's really cool to get more, like, the more people get eyes on the format, the more diverse the format gets. It's just been very encouraging to see that. I love it. I am excited to see what happens next month. We have a really cool guest next month, so who never has hot takes. So that will be a great episode. Because I will not be the hot take machine on that episode. And I'm really looking forward to it.
I love that for you.
It is great. I have said this before. I don't know how this person can just say some of the things they say and get no pushback. And I will say some of the most like medium take and people will be like, rah! And I'm just like, okay, I'm sorry. I'm sorry. I said Rog-Sai struggles in top 16. Leave me alone.
I think it's the hair.
It's the hair. It's definitely the hair. It's the great Scott Ian.
Good.
I still have the sunglasses sitting right here.
I'm really proud of you. Yeah, you really forced that one in there.
I did get a comment that we do need to do the part 3 where we talk about newer commanders that are hidden gems. Because we will be coming back to the future.
Back to the future.
So we're probably going to have to do the part 3 to finish off the trilogy.
it's what the people want.
It's what the people want. So look forward to that. Anything else you're going to, I guess this will have already come out because, you know, this has been a Back to the Future podcast the entire time.
Right.
Always in the past. We're coming to you in the future right now. And so this event will have already happened.
Going back in. Yes. Yeah. So I have Commander Challenge 9 this weekend in TX's. Going to be going there for that one. Yeah. It's kind of exciting. It's in the middle of Anime North, which is a really cool convention. I would love to, you know, kind of report back, which I will be doing for sure. And we'll be talking about, like, you know, what happened to the tournament scene, where things are at. I'm really excited for it. It's going to be a different format. And, you know, I definitely, there are some things with the structure that I already know I'm going to have comments on. But, like, they were already really good about being like, okay, but, like, we can't change a lot right now. But, like, for next year, let's talk about what we can change. Right. So I love when a group is, like, willing to be flexible with those things, for sure. So we'll see what happens with it. I'm very excited to go there. And
you're taking to Macron?
I am debating. It's okay. Between, I'm really trying to fill out the year with a lot of decks that I've not played, right? Like, my go-to is, like, I want to play a diverse array of strategies in this format, and I want to perform with each and every one of them, right? So I haven't taken Tim Necrom. I haven't taken Atraxa yet. I have struggled to bring Dawnwaker to where I want it to, so that's been a thought for the week, too.
But how, like, much do I need, like, to pay you to get you to play Ardenchrom?
We can definitely actually figure out, like, a real amount of
because
money.
Because I think Ardenchrom's better than you give it credit for. And I think you would not hate playing that deck.
There are certain amounts of money that will make me consider playing Ardenchrom this weekend. The only problem is it's a no proxy tournament. Mm. And I don't know that I have all the cards for Ardenchrom is the other problem. Oh,
we'll see if I was going.
Send me the list. We'll take a look. Send me the list.
But yeah, so you're going to be doing that, and give them the coaching spiel.
Oh yeah. Hey everybody. My name is Ian. And over the last 2 years, I have had more top performances with more diverse decks than any other player in the world, which is pretty cool, I would argue. And if you want to receive coaching from the player in question who has done that, feel free to check me out at comedianmtg@gmail.com. Send me a message if you're interested in coaching. You can check me out on Twitter or Discord, all those places I'm available. Just look up comedianmtg at any of those places. You can also find them in the description of each and every one of my YouTube videos, which is over youtube.com/@comedianmtg. And also, I have different types of coaching now, which is cool. I can do one-on-one sessions and gameplay sessions where I sit with three people who are interested in those coaching sessions. We play for about 2 hours after every game. We do a little bit of breakdown, talk about areas where I'm like, oh, this was a pivotal point in the game. What can we learn from this, et cetera, et cetera. And go from there. And they've been really fun. I've done two so far, and I have nothing but hope that these are really fun. And also, like, worst case scenario, we get to play games for 2 hours. Yeah. So that's pretty awesome. And they've been actually really fun and really informative, which I'm really happy about.
That's good. Awesome. I'm really glad that that's working out for you. And it's a, you know, best CEDH player in the world, baby. Like, I said it, you didn't say it. So you get plausible deniability.
This is the thing I do where I get uncomfortable and smile because someone complimented me.
How do you want to end this episode, Ian?
You know, I figure we're doing a lot of sci-fi stuff with the Back to the Future, right? So I figure if we sort of create like a memento style thing where the episode starts playing backwards as of right now.
What does this tattoo mean?
yeah. I think I have to play Kiki Shiki.
Oh, this is what I play this weekend. No.
Oh my God. I think, hear me out. Ready? We go. And this is the good thing. I'm going to build it up a little bit, right? And then, so at this point in the episode, what's going to happen is I'm going to look at you. I go 1, 2, 3. Ooh, ooh.
That I'm trying to keep, yeah. All these memories bittersweet, yeah. Gotta move, can't stay here no more. 여기까지 믿다가 나와서 내가 돼. 'Cause we can't keep making these rain clouds stay overhead. Don't wanna keep this going. Can't fix what's already broken. 생각을 돌이켜봐도 혼자 되뇌어봐도
So at this point, I need you to actually just end the episode raw. So as soon as I do the countdown, it just like cuts.
Oh, perfect. You know? Perfect. Okay.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I'm going to keep all this in. And then.
No, come on.
No, I'm joking. That's amazing. I love it.